This is Sheila Hamill and Andrew Ridgwick with New Day Dawning. Welcome to the programme and thank you for joining us on Radio South Tyneside, your caring community radio.
I'm getting ready for a new day dawning. I'm getting ready for a brand new morning. Packing my bags for a heavenly journey. I can't wait to be there. No, I can't wait to be there.
This morning we have with us a special guest, our country's second female diocesan bishop, the Right Reverend Christine Hardman, who has served as Bishop of Newcastle these last 6 years, but who is retiring soon on the 30th of November. Good morning, Bishop.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine. It's a very interesting time when you are approaching such a big change in one's life.
Yes, yes. Bishop Christine, I was sad to hear that you were retiring. But as I understand it, it's a mandatory requirement for bishops to retire at the age of 70. What has it meant to you to be Bishop of Newcastle, and do you regret that your time of office is coming to an end?
It's been the most amazing 6 years of my life. It's been quite extraordinary. And I would not have missed it for the world. Wouldn't have missed it for the world. As a bishop, you have the most extraordinary privilege of becoming deeply embedded in the life of the diocese. And you meet the whole range of people in their everyday lives. And I have fallen in love with the Northeast. So, although I believe the time is right to retire, I can't help but be having a real sense of loss about it, because it's just been so wonderful.
You did retire once before when you were Archdeacon in the Diocese of Southwark.
Yes.
So let's just say, for example, you had a calling to be the next female Archbishop of Canterbury. Would you want to come out of retirement a second time?
I think that I've learned to say never say never, because you never know what God's going to surprise you with.
But I think
that is so unlikely that I don't have to worry about it.
But will you have to resign your seat now in the House of Lords as
a
result?
Yes, the House of Lords seat belongs to your office as bishop. So when on the 30th of November, I will cease to be a Lord Spiritual, as well as ceasing to be Bishop of Newcastle.
But not all bishops have that position.
No, they don't.
Right.
But if you do, it ceases on your retirement.
Yes.
And then there'll be another bishop whose turn it will be to come in to make up the number.
Yes. Councillor Nick Forbes has said that you deserve the prize for the one who looks least like a bishop. And as far as I'm concerned, that's a huge compliment. But you've been very active in the public sphere as well as the church. You've served on committees to do with the economy and child poverty. You've rubbed shoulders with other faith leaders. You've offered spiritual guidance in the community, and not just the church. You've spoken up on national and international issues. So what have been the real highlights of your office?
Having the opportunity to do all those things that you've just mentioned is such a gift. So being able to use the office of bishop in order to have a voice, and particularly to speak for those who are not heard, for those with voice. So being a bishop gives you this immense privilege of being able to be involved with a voice in all these different spheres. So that's been tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
I've also been very conscious that it's not always the big occasions, though, that are the highlights. For me, it can often have been visiting a small church, small congregation, and being able to just rejoice with people in that context, and to just affirm the wonderful work they're doing. So it's about the small as well as the more obvious large occasions.
And what a great honour for you to have been given the freedom of the City of Newcastle in recognition of what council leaders have called your enormous impact on the life of the city and its residents. They say that you've served with great distinction and have enriched the life of the city and you're the first faith leader in their history to have been given the title. What has that meant to you?
When I first heard that this was to happen, I'm not often speechless, but I was speechless.
We say gobsmacked in this area.
Indeed, that's a better way of putting it. I was both speechless and moved. I couldn't believe it. It just felt so unimaginable. I would never have imagined that, that I would have this honour conferred upon me, and it means the world. I felt so proud for our diocese, actually, because it shows that, for me, that we're being seen as credible partners working with others for the common good of the people of the North East.
Could you explain to our listeners what it actually means? You don't get a key to the free key into the banks and the shops at night time, do you?
And there were two kinds of freemen in Newcastle. There's the hereditary freeman, and that you become a hereditary freeman passing down. It used to be father to son, but I think now women are also allowed to be hereditary freemen. And that gives you the right, among other things, to graze your cattle on the town moor. The honorary freeman, of which I am now one, we don't have that right with the cattle.
Okay. Unfortunately.
Yeah, no cows on the town moor for me. It really is what is so moving about it is that if you read the description of it, it says this is the highest honor the city can bestow, and I'm touched beyond words to have received that.
Well, thanks for that, making that clear to us. You must be immensely proud of the way in which Newcastle Cathedral has been transformed through the Making Sacred Space Common Ground renovation project. I was in there recently and it was amazing. From dull and grubby and raggy around the edges, it's now light and colourful and modern. It's got IT explaining its history, but I understand the task wasn't easy once the pandemic restrictions crept in. I think it was a plan in the making before you arrived, was it not?
It is such a joy. And for anybody listening who hasn't, if you are able at some point to go and visit Newcastle Cathedral, our cathedral in our city, it is just stunning now. And I think everybody will feel their spirits lifted by going there. And it's so interesting because people think it was so dark. And people think that it's been cleaned inside, the walls have been cleaned, but nothing has happened at all to the windows of the walls. It's just that the light is now just so wonderful. It's been an extraordinarily, that the work for this project has been phenomenal. I think there were at least three, it may even have been four applications to English Heritage for the funding. And it was just perseverance to keep on, you know, applying for that. And so many people put so much of their time and effort into helping us achieve this bid. And there are more people than I can thank, but it's been an incredible effort between so many people to do this. But I have to say that under Dean Jeff's leadership, what we have now achieved is just extraordinary. But my goodness, what a task. And of course, the pandemic in the middle of all this,
yes.
There was a way in which it initially delayed it a bit, but after that, actually, it proved quite helpful. And you know the way that builders like to work in a house when it's empty? There was a sense in which not having to use the cathedral for get it sorted out every Sunday back for worship meant that the work could proceed rather more quickly, actually.
Yes.
So they made up the time delays. But now the real challenge is there. We have the beautiful building and the Lantern Project offering a sense of care for people who live on the margins. But now we've got to really see the cathedral fulfill its role and come into life, and every evidence is showing it's doing that. I'm thrilled to be
there. Were so many visitors in when I was
there. We're getting about 400 or 500 a day now, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, which, you know,
that is
amazing,
fabulous,
isn't it?
The one thing I noticed, what really took my breath away, and I thought they've been cleaned with the stained glass windows.
They haven't been cleaned.
But there's a great message there. You know, there's new lighting.
Yes.
The light is shining
it's
through.
Fantastic.
And the colours look amazing, don't they?
It's beautiful. And things like the Collingwood Memorial, which was sort of lost in a little dark corner.
Yes.
It now has the dignity we would want it to have. Mm. And the sense that we're hearing through the wonderful kind of dramatisation of the ledger stones, which are the stones that yes. mark the lives of people who died in the past, you can now press a button with the new tech and the stone will just gently light up and you hear the story of the person whose life is being commemorated telling that story.
Yes.
And so it's our cathedral,
yes.
about our city and about our faith.
I would imagine, though, you've had the most difficult time as a bishop helping churches under your care survive the last 18 months. You must have felt like a captain at sea, at the helm of a ship in the perfect storm. So how did you manage to keep heart, soul, mind and body together?
I still can't almost believe what we've been through. When you think that we suddenly found ourselves faced with a virus that we had no means of countering. Mm-hmm. And it was so serious. And we knew how serious it was here very early on, as my lovely PA, Leslie Towers, contracted the virus before even the first lockdown and nearly died. So we really close to home, knew how serious all this was. It changed everything, didn't it? And we were literally at sea in the way you've described it. I found it really hard. I think we all did, because you were seeing such... We were having to cope with circumstances we'd not ever envisaged. Mm-hmm. And to have worship not happening in our churches, that would have been an unimaginable thing. Mm-hmm. The thing I found particularly hard was that I function as a bishop by being with people. I think that's what I'm called to do. I'm called, as far as possible, to be with people. And of course, that was the one thing we couldn't do in person. So, and I'm really not a lover of technology. So I was on a very steep learning curve to yes. get the minimum kind of competence, but it wasn't something that energised me. It was recording something on video is not what I feel brings out actually the real me in a way. So to spend hours sitting at a desk with a computer, it was the last thing in the world I wanted to be a bishop, but it had to be done.
Yes.
I was immensely proud of the work of our clergy and lay people in how we found new ways of supporting one another, serving the communities we serve, you know, and people found all sorts of wonderful ways to do that. I was really moved by dropping in on the odd Zoom service to find that there could be a really quite elderly congregation mm-hmm. who had come to grips. They got their iPads and were determined that nothing was going to stop them from joining in. But it was such a tough thing. And I also felt very strongly when we looked at deciding how we were going to respond locally as a church. What rules were we going to have? How were we going to do this? Were we going to open up? Were we not going to open up? I have a strong conviction, and I said to our parish clergy, you are the people who know best what will work in your local community. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to give a diktat from Bishop's House about how things have to happen. I'd love to hear from you about your advice for what you're doing locally, but you know best. So local people know best what works for them locally.
Mm.
And that worked beautifully, actually, and people made quite different decisions depending on their context, depending on the level of risk that they knew their congregation were open to. So if you've got a very elderly, fragile congregation, you might make a different decision to if you have quite a few younger people and mm-hmm. you're making that. But local people, local parish priests did the most amazing job.
But you're only human. How did you, panic? How did you face this issue yourself?
I didn't panic, but I felt a bit lost at times, actually.
As did we all.
And just trying to discern the way forward for us. And I also felt a deal of sadness at everything that people were going through.
I was talking to someone recently who had lost 19 people that she knew over the last 18 months, some to just ordinary deaths, some to COVID, some to suicide. That's an awful lot of people.
It is, and I think one of the things that hurt all of us so badly was that I lost 4 dear friends in that time. Mm-hmm. I couldn't go to any of their funerals.
Yes.
I never want to watch a funeral on live stream again. You know, to have that sense of, it's better than nothing, but it
detachment.
It doesn't help us to deal with the grief we've all been feeling, and we've all had to face quite a lot of grief, actually, quite a lot of loss. I mean, there've been some wonderful things that have emerged. God can bring something even out of the lockdown and COVID, and there've been some fantastically lovely things that have happened.
Creative things.
Yes, but it was at such a cost.
Yes.
So, and we're not through this yet.
No. I was going to say the storm still rages. But people have such a negative view of church, unfortunately, in today's world. And I get the impression from some people they think we're only on about worship and eternal life when there are important issues like climate change, abortion, persecution of Christians in the world and other faiths, poverty, the dangers of the internet. Which of these issues are closest to your heart, or are all of them?
I think all of those things that you've mentioned are really, really significant. I think the thing I want to call people to is that all too often we create false dichotomies. We say either or.
Yes.
It's both and. Both and. We don't have to choose, you know, that either or. My people that know me well know that I'm endlessly quoting Archbishop William Temple, who was Archbishop of York before the Second World War and then went to be Archbishop of Canterbury during the Second World War. And he always said, famously, the church exists for the benefit of those who are not its members. So our calling actually is not to have as our first priority our own survival. It is to serve the communities in which we are placed, and to, in ways that resonate, to share the faith we have, to bring the hope that we have deep inside us about meaning and about the triumph of love over evil and hatred. So we're always called to look outwards and to be involved in the issues that affect people's lives, because I believe God cares deeply about people's everyday lives and the circumstances in which they find themselves. So I do think that's our core business. Some people would argue that the church should stay out of what they say. The church should stay out of politics. We hear that a lot. And if I make a statement about poverty or something, I'll get a number of people who will write to me very disgruntled about that. But I think, if you think the church should stay out of politics, which is not party politics, but the way we organise our lives, politics is the art of organising our lives, I wonder which gospel they've read. On Saturday morning, I walked with some climate pilgrims who'd walked from Poland and they're walking to Glasgow to the COP26 conference. They were mainly Roman Catholics from Germany, Denmark, all kinds of places. They were passionately committed to the issue of climate change, so much so they were walking, they'd already walked nearly 2,000 kilometres, you know, so incredible. This was part and parcel of their Christian faith. It wasn't something they did, they would believe they were being called as Christians into this witness because of our duty to care for the beautiful creation that God has given us, that we are in danger of completely destroying. Mm-hmm. So these issues, I think, not everybody who's working for climate change, of course, has a Christian faith. Mm-hmm. And they're working with equally serious integrity. But we need to be able to join and find our partners and work together. But for a Christian, it's we do this out of our faith. I do think that in terms of... So I think climate change is a hugely significant mm-hmm. issue. I also mm-hmm. think poverty is a terrible thing. And I think that at the moment, as we face quite a perfect storm of a different kind, actually, as we see prices rising, energy crisis, all kinds of these sorts of things, that we do really have to see whether we cannot... my own feeling would be that those who are the very poorest people in our society should not be bearing the major mm-hmm. impact of that, because it makes so much difference if mm-hmm. you have nothing. Mm-hmm. So I think those with the broadest shoulders should carry the heaviest load. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what are your plans now, anyway? How do you envisage your retirement? Will you keep up with your jogging and your e-cycling? Take up a hobby or head for the easy chair in the log fire?
It certainly won't be the easy chair in the log fire. Mm-hmm. Not yet, anyway. I will enjoy, Roger and I will enjoy having... One of the things I noticed in my first retirement mm-hmm. is that it really is, when you lay down an office that's been incredible, but also all-consuming, there is a sense of loss about that, clearly. But you also have a sense of freedom, mm-hmm. because as things emerge, you're able to say yes to things.
Yes.
And that's lovely. And I know that I will enjoy, just in the first instance, seeing more of family, mm. and also rebuilding relationships with our friends who've been very long suffering and live at a distance and haven't seen much of us for the last 6 years. Mm-hmm. So we can start to rebuild, and because our relationships are really important, aren't they?
And that's important. It's a yeah. gift, isn't it?
And I'm looking forward reconnect. To being able to do that. Yes. And also we'll definitely go on one long bike journey, I'm sure of that, but other things will emerge. And I've kindly been invited by the Bishop of St Albans to become an honorary assistant bishop in St Albans Diocese.
In where, sorry?
St Albans Diocese,
oh,
where
really?
We'll be living.
Yes.
And so I'll give it a few months, but that will, I know, be a privilege again to serve as a retired bishop. Mm.
It's a lovely addition to ours to have Bishop Centimoon.
Isn't it wonderful?
Isn't it? I was so pleased with that appointment. I first saw him on stage speaking, and then all of a sudden he went over to the drums, to the band, and he started playing the drums. Yeah. Most unlike a bishop again. Another person that deserves the prize of being least like a bishop.
Yeah, I think he does.
I'm sure the people in the North East would want me to thank you on their behalf for your 6 years of dedicated service and for being such a wise, compassionate and understanding spiritual leader to us, but also for being a clear voice and raising many important issues for us here, particularly the need for investment in this region, yes. Which has so much potential.
Yes.
I'm sure you'll continue to be a voice for us wherever you can be.
Certainly will.
And perhaps you'll even put a good word in for us to have a decent major road up to Scotland. But you won't really be able to escape us on the national news should we rise to the top of the Premier League. So we'll be constantly there in your thoughts, I'm sure. But will you really miss us all in the North East? Because we will miss you.
I can't tell you how much I'm going to miss it. It's a convention that a bishop has to move outside their diocese, otherwise you'd be stuck with me, I'm afraid. we have fallen in love. We've fallen in love with the people. We've fallen in love with the landscape. But it's the people above everything, actually. Mm. And yes, so we have to move, but we will be back lots.
Well, may you have a wonderful retirement and a well-earned rest, and we wish you many happy and exciting years ahead with your husband and your family.
Thank you.
Finally,
so
would you please give your blessing to our listeners, many of whom are listening from hospital beds?
Yeah. That would be lovely. Gracious and loving God, pour your grace upon us and lead us in our journeys filled with faith and hope and love. We pray for your healing in our lives and ask your blessing now upon us. In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Thank you so much, Bishop Christine. You've been listening to New Day Dawning. Our special guest this morning was the Right Reverend Christine Hardman, Bishop of Newcastle, who retires from office shortly. We're going to leave you today with a song chosen by Bishop Christine, Longing for Light, by Bernadette Farrell, and sung here by the Notre Dame Youth Choir. This is Sheila Hammer saying goodbye, and thank you for listening in today. Thank you also to Andrew Ridgwick for his technical help each week in bringing you this programme. Bye for now.